It's time for the best 60 minutes of your life. This is the Homer Hour, broadcasting live from the Gruber Law Office's One Call That's All studio at the Avenue in downtown Milwaukee, alongside former Packer Brian Bulaga. Here's Emmy Award winner Homer.
The best 60 minutes of your day, the Brian Bulaga Homer Hour, and he has done a fabulous job. First of all, good evening. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm fine. You know the question to ask. You've been fantastic at it. I've failed in asking it. And today's question, as it starts every show, is...
Is the Miz on the mound tonight?
Is the Miz on the mound? Oh, baby, he's on the mound. You bet he is on the mound. He hasn't pitched for a while. And of course, this is your home for whether the dome is open or closed. As a matter of fact, I think Friday is when we start the partnership with Old Fashioned Roofing, because it's a roof update. Is it open or closed? And if you go to YouTube, you go to ESPN Milwaukee, you'll be able to determine that as to whether or not the roof is open or closed.
I love it. I love it.
Clear to everyone.
Yep.
If you go here for that service, about 5:02 every evening, the Brewers have a home game. They do tonight, and I think they do again tomorrow. I'll have to check. But most importantly, you stated it. The Miz is pitching tonight, and at the present time, even someone who has promoted him, he's even better than I thought. If he continued at his current pace, he would have one of the top pitching performances in the history of baseball. Right now, judging by the number that I use, which is ERA plus, because it measures your ERA and then factors in what people are doing in terms of how well are people hitting in baseball that year in the parks that you're in. The greatest pitching performance for a season ever was Pedro Martinez. I can't remember the year, but they're hitting all kinds of home runs, and his ERA was like under two. It's not possible. Greg Maddux was second, and right now the Miz would be third. I have to check to see how it ranks to the incredible season that CC Sabathia had. He didn't pitch an entire season here, but that would be the ultimate. There's no way to describe how well he's pitching. You can't exaggerate how well he's pitching. And this doesn't have necessarily to do with the strikeouts. He has that too, but no, he's not giving up any runs.
The ERA plus takes all that junk into factor.
Yes, which is important. For example, if your the greatest season probably pitching, I have to go back, was Bob Gibson in 1960, whatever, but the mound was low and nobody was scoring any runs. So it was easier to have a low ERA. In fact, it was so tough hitting that they raised the mound the next year. So you factor in how your pitching is doing compared to everybody else. Just like quarterbacks. Quarterback numbers now are so much better than quarterback numbers were in terms of passing back in the 60s. Example, Bart Starr still has, I think, the greatest season ever, which wouldn't seem possible for the Packers. I think it was maybe the year after they won their last Super Bowl, because he had such incredible numbers at a time when they didn't pass that much. Now everybody passes. So in football, it's quarterback rating plus, which again factors what all the other teams are doing, the game that you played in. And to me, that's the perfect way to do it. That's why Babe Ruth, I don't have to look at his number, but Babe Ruth was hitting more home runs than teams were hitting. Yeah. So there's no way that's going to happen again, where someone will be so dominant given the nature of baseball at the time. Barry Bonds was pretty close maybe one year. Because he never made any outs. If he's either hitting a home run or he's drawing a walk. But I'd have to look. And again, it also factors in where you play. If you play in Colorado, then that's going to affect your OPS plus. And if you're a pitcher, you might have an ERA of 4. And if you pitch for Colorado, your ERA plus might be way better than people could believe, because it factors in. I don't know that they do that in football other than for the quarterback. For example, you guys would have liked it with Aaron Rodgers because he held the ball so long that I think you would believe a sack should be 8/10 of a sack if the sack occurs after 9 hours in the pocket.
That would have been a nice stat to have.
Yes.
That would have been nice.
And it would be fair. It probably exists somewhere. But I have not seen it. And, of course, you accept the fact that there's nobody wastes any time worrying about offensive line.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. Easy to blame. Easy to point the finger at.
Yeah.
Wash your hands of it.
But, again, offensive linemen know. And quarterbacks know. They just don't necessarily go public with it, right? I mean, if I were an offensive lineman, I would say, have said to Aaron Rodgers, look it, you're one of the greatest quarterbacks ever, but can you not hold the ball for like 2 weeks? You know, I mean, and if I was Aaron Rodgers, I'd go, shut up. Like, so 9 plays out of 10, I'm easier than a normal quarterback. On 1 out of 10, I'm worse. You tell me, offensive lineman, are you better or worse being a lineman for me than name any other quarterback? I mean, I know you'd want to be Brady. He releases the ball in 1/3 of a second. But other than him, who would be a better quarterback to play in front of? Because not only do I make you better, but we win, and that's going to get you more money, too. So this is what Aaron would say. Rodgers probably say, shut up!
Yeah, put that into your OPS plus.
Yes, there you go. Yeah, that's about what he would say, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, he would tell you to shut up.
Are you better or worse playing in front of me as quarterback? Just give me the bottom line. Better or worse? You factor in all your analytics. And I think the average offensive lineman would say, I would, better. You're still just a pain in the butt. That would have been my answer. What would have been your answer? All right, Bulaga, did he have a nickname for you? Did he call you Blue, too, or not?
I did that.
Yeah, he had to have his own nickname.
Bull. It was Bull. He called me Bull.
All right, so, yeah. Bull, just give me a yes or no. Are you better or worse to have to block in front of me compared to any other quarterback in the NFL? Better or worse?
Yeah, I mean, my answer would be better. All right. And then he'd say, good, shut up.
Yeah.
Leave me alone.
Yes. And I think we're accurate on all that. I don't believe you ever had that conversation specifically.
No.
Yeah.
We never had that talk. That was never a talk.
Did any of the other? I could see Bakhtiari saying, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, guys would Sitton and Lang and Bach, they'd harass him a little bit about it, and he'd tell them the same thing. Shut up. Leave me alone. and there's nothing you could do about it. Oh. And that'd be that.
Right. Next time you tell me, when you're perfect, let me know.
Yeah.
Essentially. And I can't imagine, but I would be curious as to what he would come up with. As for the worst thing about each of the all, because I know he'd have something. Yeah, if you didn't do this, I'd be better. You don't have to put up with this or put up with that. I don't know what each one would be, but I'm sure he'd do serious study, right? They come after him. He's coming back.
Yeah, he'd come up with his laundry list. He'd have it. I mean, it's probably already prepared mentally in his head just in case. But it never got to that because most of the time it was in jest. You know, it was always in joking around with them and giving them a hard time. Because, like you said it, like, for every drop back or for every 10 drop backs, maybe he did one of those 6-7 second holds. And most of the time they came off. He would do something with it and would complete a long pass or would scramble around and get out of the pocket and get 10, 15 yards around. So if he took a sack one time doing it and you were mad at him, he'd do it again and he'd kill a defense and you'd be like, yeah. All right, well, how am I supposed to tell him that I'm mad at him when he just did that? There's nothing you can really say to him. So it was mostly in jest and it was normally the day after a game. You'd walk by him in the hallway passing between meetings, studying the film. Like, dude, can you like throw the ball? Shut up. Leave me alone.
No, I actually wish I had played line for him. Not good enough. Cause I said, it depends if you're winning. You come back and said, damn, even for you, that's amazing for how long you took. Or, and then in the hallway, if you'd won the game, New record, Rodgers. 13 seconds. Way to go. Way to go. I think you got 20 in you if you work at it.
Yeah, you know, it was always funny because all my friends and family, if we were on a road game, even at the home game, if the TV's up in the club seats or whatever it was, like, at one point, I forgot what season it was. It might have been the 2014 season. They started putting up the timer on the screen for when he would, for protection, because we were a good pass-blocking group. So they were able to put the timer on there and how much time he had to sit in the pocket on Sunday Night Football. And you take a lot of pride in that, obviously, as an offensive lineman. I mean, if they put the timer up there and you're hitting 5-6 seconds, you're like, all right, it's pretty good. Like I know they're showing that he's holding the ball, but it's also highlighting that the offensive line is doing what they need to do and holding up in pass protection for that long and keeping him clean, allowing him to do what he does best, and that's improvise when things aren't going right. And again, as stressful as those moments were, you knew there was a high chance of a payoff on it. And that, to me, is the, you know, what was always the trade-off. Yeah, it stressed you out because it could come at any time, but in the same breath, be a 40-yard pass that gets you out of trouble and it just kills the defense and you're probably going to go score. And it's just like, you can't be mad about it if one or two times it doesn't come off and he gets sacked or he takes a big hit. And if he took a big hit, we'd always tell him, like, that's on you, bud. And like, listen, like that one's
not
on
during
you.
The game the next day, or even during the game if you're way ahead or something. I don't know.
If it was way, no, it would be the next day. Yeah. You don't want to poke the bear. You don't want to do that. It'd be the next day. But if you got sacked and that came through, I mean, you said it, like, there'd be no public statement from the lineman on it about, oh, that's on him, or like, that's not what we did. We would eat it and move on. Like, that's just, if you're going to say it was on the left tackle or the right tackle or the guard, okay, we'll eat it. But like you said, people in the building, everyone knew what was going on and what got assigned to who and whatnot. Like, it was a pretty open conversation of what was going on. Now, if you get beat in 2 seconds, that's on you. That you stink. You stunk that play. Like, that's not good enough. But like, if you're giving up a sack after 5.5 seconds, it's like, all right. Like, hey, yeah, I know. I wish I could have held it for another second and a half.
Are you ever able to have an idea at that length where, in which direction he tends to go to where without looking back? I got to believe if you're there long enough, you knew he had a tendency, but is that just impossible to do that long into a play?
You know, you'd get a feel of where he was based on the pass rusher. At a certain point, your internal clock is going off and you're like, all right, like, something's going on back there. And if you had your guy viced up pretty good, right, if you had your hands on him and you're controlling the block, I normally could take a peek inside and see where he was. If he was stepping up, I could look inside really quick, see where he was. If I didn't see him stepping up inside, that normally means he was trying to boot around the outside. So then I would start working my body more upfield and trying to give him a clear lane so I wouldn't get a cheap holding call if he broke the pocket and then the DN was trying to flail his arms in the air that he was getting held. So normally his escape route always was up and through the B gap. That's where he liked to go. So he liked guys to go high and wide. The guards would, you know, either run their guy high and wide or they'd be able to stonewall and force guys into the A gap and keep that middle pretty compact. And he'd like to get up and out of the B gap. He'd like to bait pass rushers up the field and then step up through the B gap and then out and down the line of scrimmage. And he could either run or throw it. So what side he was looking to escape on per play, you don't know, because that's all based on what he thought the route combination was. And for a long time, it was where Jordy was going to end up, because he and Jordy had a amazing, like, nonverbal communication connection that they just kind of knew where they were, like, what was going to happen. And if Aaron broke the pocket, where Jordy should go. And Jordy was always open and he'd deliver to him. And then Tay came and it was kind of the same way with Tay. So it was based on where those guys were going. And honestly, like, Like, you would know a lot of the route combinations. Like, I would know them based on, like, hearing them so often and seeing them on film. But, like, when he broke the pocket, I don't know where these wide receivers are going at that point in time. Like, it's kind of like they called it getting friendly, like get friendly with the quarterback. So if you see him break containment, break the pocket, like you break your route off and then start to get friendly and work open for
Right,
him.
And
So like,
Jordy understood what that meant and what was going on in the head of Aaron Rodgers better than anybody else.
yeah, so like where those receivers were going to end up, no idea. So it was just kind of one of those things that it was like, just hold your block. Like, if you could take a quick peek back and see where he is, that'll help you out. But if you don't, just assume that he's probably going to try to break containment on the outside. So be mindful of, holding on to the DN too long so you don't get that holding call that a lot of tackles get when the quarterback breaks out and the DN's trying to chase him and he throws his hands up. I always tried to, when I felt that, I could always start to feel when the D lineman was starting to like try to get his hands up to throw it. I'd give him a big shove and let go, and then I could try to kill some momentum from the D lineman that I can try to go re-engage as much as I could before Aaron got out and he could throw it. But that's
All
here
right,
or
so
there.
what's the maddest he ever got at you in the hu in a huddle?
Normally false starts. If you false started, he got really pissed off at you,
What did he say?
which.
Come on, Bull, let's go. Or I don't know what he would
Yeah,
say.
Something like that.
All
Maybe
right.
with a maybe with
F
an
word. Yeah, all
expletive.
right, that's
Yeah,
fine.
yeah,
But it was
yeah.
pretty short and to the point.
Yeah,
And
and you want,
clearly not
yeah.
necessary, but that's just him being him.
Yeah, which is fine. I get it. Yeah, like you shouldn't jump off sides, but it happens. I think every offensive lineman in the history of the NFL has jumped off sides. If they haven't, it's amazing to me.
They're just lying. Steve in Madison, you're on with Brian Bulaga, and the bull or blue or whatever they call him is probably happy because he'd much rather answer your questions than mine, and I don't care. Yes, Steve, let her fly.
Yeah, I got two for Brian, but first, Homer, you screwed it up. You had it backwards. They actually lowered the mound instead of raising it because of Gibson. Because of the height of the mound, you got more speed on the ball and more action on the
Thank you.
curve ball
Stand
because it
corrected.
comes.
1960 something. So they lowered the mound.
Right.
Okay. Thank you.
And Brian, first of two, speed rusher or bull rusher, or which do you prefer to go up against?
All day bull rusher. All day.
Because
That's I just that's the type of game that I'd like to play. I'd like to invite power. So I try to take away speed at all costs with my pass set and with getting off the ball good and jumping the snap count and then absorb power. Like, that was my game. You want to try to take away the pass rusher's most dangerous move, and that's normally their speed and their hands and what they're so good at. Those guys are freak shows out on the edge. And they're way more athletic than us. So if I could take that away from them based on my set and the angles I take and how quick I am off the ball, and their only view sight is like, I got to go through this guy, that's a win for me. I'd rather do that 10 out of 10 times than say, let Von Miller try to run the hoop on me or something like that. Like, no doubt I'd rather take on power than speed.
So if you got the initial push by him on the power guy, you've got him pretty well licked
Is
then.
that true of almost all offensive linemen, or would you say that this position that you hold, Brian, is not the norm?
No, I mean, I think most tackles would rather face power than guy's best speed rush. I just think you have a better opportunity if you got a good anchor that once you take on that initial surge from them and you can get your hands refitted and really good, you got a good chance of winning the block. And to me, that's and that's the if you look at it, the way pass rushers rush, that's the longest way to the quarterback is through somebody. If they go around you and they beat you somewhat clean, they can get to the quarterback at 7 yards pretty easily. But if I make him go through me and go through that resistance and he has to fight through that or try to push me all the way back to the quarterback to then even touch the quarterback, I would assume the ball should be gone by then. That's the way I looked at it. So if you handle the first initial pop from the defensive ends and you're able to react to what they do next, really high percentage of winning that block and winning that rep.
Hurry up offense. You got that at the end of halves or games, but in the middle of a game, like, if the offense is stalling and you do that hurry up offense, do linemen have a problem with that? Or because the defensive linemen are going to get tired also at the same time.
Yeah, no, I think throwing in a hurry up offense sporadically throughout a game, especially if you're stalling out as an offense, is a good changeup. Getting to the ball, making that defense feel pressure and make their call and get aligned and have them communicate is a plus for the offense. And most of the time when you do go into that no huddle, defenses end up playing pretty basic shells and basic vanilla defenses. They don't do anything exotic. They don't have time to get the call off because they don't want to get caught communicating and making a call mid-snap. So, like, most of the time they run pretty basic formations and they don't pressure a whole bunch, and the coverage is pretty plain Jane because they can't communicate it to everyone in time. So I'm all for that, especially if you're stalling out as an offense and you just can't seem to get it going. A little up-tempo, hurry-up offense never hurt. And honestly, like, people might think it gasses out the offensive lineman. It really doesn't.
Why not?
It just doesn't. I don't know why. Like, I never felt, unless you're down in Miami and it's like 98 degrees.
But then you feel that way every play, whether it's fast or not.
Yeah, that doesn't matter at that point. Then it's just hot. I mean, you're going to be gassed regardless. But most of the time, the hurry up never felt out of wind from it. I don't know why.
Somebody should tell the announcers, because you can see the defensive linemen seem to fatigue. Have you noticed that when you play?
Yes.
But they're used to rotating in and out. That could be a part of that dynamic or not. Is it?
That's the biggest part of it. They have to stay on the field, because especially when it was with Aaron, because if he caught them trying to sub, he'd snap it, get him with 12 men on the field and throw a deep ball. So you get a free play plus 5 yards, either or. So you'd keep those D linemen on the field as long as humanly possible so that they would be exhausted when they would try to pass rush.
And that's more a case of just the normal amount of plays that the person plays defensively versus what you do offensively.
Yes,
I mean, some of them are bigger than a house. So, but offensive linemen are pretty big.
Yeah, they're not small.
I don't know how. I don't know if the average. I would say the average defensive line. I don't know, because I guess you're really only counting the one in the middle or the two in the middle. The guys on the ends can be, but I'd say the nose guard, whatever, the guy in the middle or the two, if it's in a four-man front, the defensive probably are a little bit bigger.
Yeah, probably a little bit heavier.
Yeah.
So, yeah, probably a little bit heavier.
50 years ago today, what happened? Next. The Brian Bulaga Homer Hour, and yes, we are your home for whether the dome is open or closed. You can go to ESPN Milwaukee in the Homer Hour. You know how it works. It's pretty clear. And yes, 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 The Miz is pitching tonight. It is impossible to overstate how incredible he's been. He is currently on pace to have one of the greatest pitching seasons in the history of baseball. If he finished tonight, this season, with the numbers he has now, it would go down as by what I think is the best at the third greatest pitching season ever, factoring in all the other things that are appropriate, what team you play for, what your park is like, and how the baseball game is going in terms of if everybody is hitting or nobody's hitting, so everybody has a good ERA. Fisco Auto Body, it's a family business owned since 1931. It's not what they do, it's who they are, and it's still the Fiscos. They haven't sold the business. They're still working on the cars. Imagine how many years they've been working on cars before they get to yours. That's one of the reasons they're so good, and they can say expert workmanship guarantee for the life of your vehicle. Any damage, Fisco has you covered. Fisco Auto Body on Forest Home in Franklin. On Forest Home in Franklin, here's how it works. If you haven't listened to me before, fine. You'll go listen to me. You'll go there, and damn, they are really good. thank them, and then eventually go, oh, yeah, I guess I should thank Homer. I like that part, too. It's a small part, but I like it. Fisco, 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 so you remember the name. And now, be hard for Brian Bulaga to remember what happened 50 years ago today, because he wasn't even born. People have no idea how young you are. I guess that before they know it, they just think you're like in your 40s. You're like 31, right? How old are you?
37.
37!
Mm-hmm.
And you've been retired from the NFL for, how old were you when you retired? 32?
Yeah.
Now, I am part of the group still hoping as, do they put this up now? Old Fashioned Roofing Fridays is what it's going to be. The roof update from Old Fashioned Roofing, as the roof open or closed. I think it shows up now as part of the ESPN Milwaukee, but whatever, I'll get it figured out. Anyway, back to, I just want you to make a comeback. Can you just, you don't seem to have any, you're not capable of getting healthy, or, because medicine, the medical breakup, not breakdowns, but improvements, whatever was the reason you had to retire, maybe they have solved it and you could make millions. Come on. One more year.
Yeah, I don't think that the will would match the...
All right.
For one, the body, right? Even if I wanted to, I don't think the body would hold up in two. Man, once you get into training camp, it's just like, oh, here we go again. Like, it's literally like, here we go again. And it's a mental... It's like every year you regroup right around training camp mentally to be like, all right, like about to get into this again. And once you start getting to a certain age, it just gets harder to get.
Right. So what if Goody calls you and says, Blue, we need you. I think we could do it this year. We need you. What would you say?
Yeah, I'd tell him I can help you try to find a guy that can help you out.
That is so good. That is exactly what you would say, right?
Yeah. Here,
no, we don't want another guy. We want you. I understand there's a limited number of plays you can do, but you're the buffer, or you're the we know that we can avoid any kind of disaster because of your availability and your ability to play some if we needed you. How am I doing?
Yeah, I'd still say the same thing. Like, I'd be like, listen, all right. give me tape of 10 guys. I'll break them down for you, and I'll let you know your best option. You go find him.
All right.
But pay me the same. But pay me the same that you'd be paying me in season to do this.
And then you know they'll say, that ain't happening.
Yeah, that's how I would know how serious they were.
All right. So you don't know what happened 50 years ago today because – like, for me, I think it was 48 years ago, not exactly today, I saw Bjorn Borg in the first round at Wimbledon against Victor Amai, who was like three-time defending champion. He was down 2-1. They thought it was going to be one of the biggest upsets ever in the first round. He came back to win, but that's only 48 years. 50 years ago today, July 20th.
I'm going to take a guess. It has something to do with the Brewers.
It does, yes.
Yeah. I mean, we're in July, so I got to assume it has to do with the Brewers.
It does.
But that's about as far as I'm going to go.
All right. I can't hold it against you since you weren't alive. 50 years ago on this day, Hank Aaron hit his final home run, number 755. Ooh. Final home run. And it was on, you can imagine. So it's July 20th. That means he had the whole rest of the season and he didn't hit one. So the tie-in is a guest of the show. In fact, my Miz expert is Jerry Augustine, who was the winning pitcher in the game in which Hank Aaron hit home run number 755. So okay. I refer to him as 755, formerly known as Jerry Augustine. And I'm assuming there's some mural that's done. I think it's somewhere that they had today and they're doing something at the park, for some, program that Hank Aaron and his wife have been a part of. I'm sure it's an education thing for kids or I think it's some written essay. But anyway, I called him up and said, I got to get a picture. Said, what do you mean? I got to get a picture of you, maybe Bud Selig. He's not really that important, but Hank Aaron's wife, 755 with the wife of 755. I mean, that's going to be forever. And so I guess they did get a picture of the three of them. And so 15 years ago. No, because it was today, but I will get it. And I'm sending it to my guy and I'm going to have him put a picture of a Hank Aaron's home run. And but I said to Jerry Augustine, and you would appreciate this. I said, so when you won the game, did you say anything to Hank? He goes, no, why would I say anything? I said, because if I was on the team and I knew Hank's near the end, I would have gone, Hank, can you do me a favor? Like, what? Don't ever hit another home run. I want to be the guy who's the winning pitcher on your final home run.
Yeah.
And Hank would probably go, we got a few games left here, buddy.
Yeah, I was going
to
say.
Why don't you ask to be the starter in a future game because I'll hit another one. And he never did. And so Jerry Augustine.
Which is wild.
Yeah. Think about, I don't know if you have any moment that you would have that would make you a part of, a historic moment that occurred. It'd be hard to me because, you know, it'd be like the last pass or, I don't know, touchdown pass at Aaron Rodgers. But with Hank Aaron, at the time and for many years, it was the most home runs ever hit. And many still believe it's the record because they don't buy totally what Barry Bonds did. But anyway, 755. I'm the winning pitcher. I can't think of any other role I would want in that game. You're a baseball guy, too. So if you're in the game the day Hank Aaron hits what turned out to be his final home run, I don't think there'd be anything better than being the winning pitcher, starting and winning pitcher.
No, I think that's probably the best case scenario.
Unless maybe you hit another home run, you know, but no one's going to remember that. Doesn't matter.
No, no one cares about your home run.
That's true, yes.
I mean, I hate to say it, but no one cares.
Now, this is where I ask you. So I've suggested to Jerry Augustine that he should change his name from Jerry Augustine to 755 Augustine. He doesn't seem to be willing to move in that direction. So all I can do is call him 755, formerly known as Jerry Augustine. Would you, if in the 50-year anniversary, would you, or maybe you could change your middle name. I think in the 50-year anniversary, I might change Jerry 755 Augustine. I don't think you would do that. You never would. You're such an honor to your parents and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I don't think so. Yeah, I don't think so.
I didn't think you would.
I mean, listen, it's a milestone. Right, for Hank Aaron and his final home run and all that, but like I don't know if the starting pitcher is going to be changing his name to 755 to.
It's a middle name. Come on, middle names are quite arguably the most irrelevant part of your name. I mean, it's not even close.
Yeah, I mean, obviously they are, but I don't know if I want my middle name to be 755.
All right, you know, well, it's the most historic thing Jerry Augustine's ever going to do, right? There's no way he's going to do anything in your life.
I don't know his entire.
Hey, he was a good pitcher. He pitched a 3-hit shutout or something, and it took an hour and 12 minutes or something.
No, that's a baseball game.
So you'd rather be called 112?
Yeah, I'd rather be called 112.
I may have told you this. It's the last comment I'll make about the. Again, so they're doing something at the ballpark. They're probably doing it right now. Jerry. So when you see Jerry Augustine, just call him 755. My middle name is Charles, but I was named after a Mexican silver dealer that my dad worked with to make a little money on the side. This guy provided him the silver, and then he sold, like, these silver rings. I never knew that. I said, so why wasn't my middle name Carlos? I mean, I'm named after Carlos. I guess in Spanish, Carlos and Charles are the same. I don't know. And that isn't really fair to him. So I told my mom. I said, I'm going to change my middle name to Carlos. That's what it should be. She didn't like the
idea. I was going to say, what was her response to that?
She said, would you please not do that?
Yeah.
And, of course, what did I do?
You didn't do it.
No, I couldn't do that to my mom.
Exactly.
But I think, maybe it's hard to believe, my mom was just an incredible person. Everybody thinks that about their mom, but I'm sorry. My mom was just better than your mom. That's all there is to it. And we can have somebody do a judge. But anyway, I was a little disappointed. Like, I thought she would say, fine, you're 50 years old, you know. But
change it to Carlos.
Yes. And but she had a look of which, like, you know, please, please don't do that. So,
I mean, I think that is amazing that you were named after a silver dealer.
Yeah. That's well, fantastic. my parents are my dad. Okay. Last sister was Lisa Hope True. Who would give a middle name of Hope when your last name is True? Come on. Like, oh, that's, they just run out of names, I guess. Like, so no, the middle names were just, Faust. I don't know. There was one of them is just like the weirdest names ever. So I thought that gave me some chance given, you know, like, Mom, you named Lisa middle name Hope. Come on. Carlos is still way better than Hope.
I mean, I think the story in general is awesome. That's, I mean, that to me is fantastic.
So, now my mom's passed away. I guess I could change it now, right?
If you wanted to go down that rabbit hole, you could certainly do it.
I would never go down that rabbit hole. I could never. I mean, I've done some weird things, but nothing is mean. Like, I mean, they do this and they put people into the Hall of Fame after they're dead. I think because I think that's going to happen to Pete Rose. They didn't want him to get in when he's alive. I think at some point now he's going to get in, given the difference in gambling. And I'm not defending what he did. It's still different, but I think he could get in. So to me, the pathetic decision by any human is waiting till someone's dead to do something they didn't like.
So then they can't. There's no disappointment right away.
Right. Yeah. I mean, the problem. But whether it's your mom or not. But if it's your mom, that's probably even worse. Next. You never know when someone you care about might need a place like Curative Care. For more than a century, Curative Care has been helping children, adults, and families across Southeast Wisconsin navigate developmental disabilities and find the support they need to thrive. What really stood out is that Curative Care doesn't just provide therapy. They help families every step of the way from early childhood through adult. They connect parents with resources, provide guidance during challenging times, and created a community where people truly belong. One parent put it this way, life is a bunch of curveballs, but this place is a constant. I'll put it another way. This stuff is hard. This is really hard and tough, and they have it figured out. They have it figured out how to help and do it the best way. If you have a family member, friend, coworker, or neighbor who may be looking for answers, support, or services for a loved one with developmental disabilities, learn more. Visit curative.org, C-U-R-A-T-I-V-E, curative.org. They have figured it out. It is the Brian Bulaga Homer Hour discussing the Green Bay Packers. I believe it was in The Athletic that the discussion was, I think they had them under 9.5 wins, something like that. And I think the end of the season last year determines everything or much about this season. And I would say that's because I don't care what happened. You shouldn't lose 5 in a row at the end if you're a good team. You'll figure out a way to do something, not necessarily have it go perfectly. They could have actually figured it out and won the division. And so how good are you? On the other hand, if you believe the injuries were a big part of it, then you'll say, we won't have the same injuries and we'll be fine. And so which is it will determine, because I claim 2010 at the end, the comment was, well, they weren't that good all year, but they were that good at the end. And they proved the Packers how good they were by continuing it in 2011. The end of the year was the start of a level. And so the Packers were at that level. Those injuries prevented it from occurring, and they'll get back near that level even without Micah Parsons for some of the games, or they proved that they weren't that good by losing all the games when things went against them. What do you say, Brian? Is that a decent theory on both sides, or am I missing something?
No, I think it's decent on both sides. I think last year was a lot of major pieces missing at once, right? Like, and it is hard to rebound from that. And listen, I get roster building's one thing and having backups, but when you miss and lose key pieces like that, it's really hard to rebound. And with them getting back some of those pieces, I get Mike is going to come back later than the rest of the guys. But when you get some of those major players back, I think you start to see the level rise back to where we saw it before they went on that five-game skid. At least that's what I'm hoping. Now, is it going to be perfect to start and watch? Probably not. It'll probably be a little rough to start. Won't be the most beautiful thing to look at, but I think that they get the job done, and that's winning. And then I think as the season progresses, you start to see this team get into a rhythm and flow like we saw them when they went on that win streak last year, and they were at, what were they, at 9-2 or whatever? I forgot what it was.
Whatever you were at before he lost five in a row.
Yeah, whatever they were at, and you were like, okay, like this team could win 13, 14 games. And like that's where I kind of see them getting into as they catch their stride in this season. And then obviously when you get Micah back, which again, I don't know the capacity and how much he's going to play and all that right when he gets back. But once he gets clicking again, and granted there aren't major injuries again, right? Like that's always a factor. I think you see this team play at the level that we saw them last year before it went terribly south.
Yeah, it's under 9.5. You bet 100, you win 105. I don't. Everybody will be just disappointed if they don't win 10 games. They play 17. That's 10-7. And yes, you could lose some early, but you feel like there are other aspects to the game. People can step up a little bit.
Yeah, the 9.5 is wild to me. If they don't win 10 football games, I'll be
right.
I'll be shocked.
You will admit. You know what? They weren't and aren't as good as I thought they were to the end of last season because you have the majority of people back. All right, we'll continue that. Yeah, that's like I think the easiest money, even easier than this, is the over wins for the Milwaukee Bucks because I think it's incredible. It's like they're supposed to win like 2 games, go 2-80 or something like that. I think it's like 23 or something.
Yeah, 24 and a half.
24 and a half, it's going up. Yeah, the kid they got, their first pick is going to be, he's going to be an all-star. But anyway, Berth.
What's the worst record in basketball history?
That's a great answer. Philadelphia 76ers, 9 wins, 9-73. We will look that up. That's the great thing about AI.
Yeah.
Stuff like that, you get an answer to right away. Milwaukee weight loss. I was at 229, now I'm at 205. Here's all you need to know about Milwaukee weight loss. It's so good, I know what my weight's going to be the rest of my life, and I'm planning on living another 20 years. At 205, I can get down to 200 if I want. I don't want to get down to 200. My face gets too thin, and I look like I'm dead. But I could do it if I wanted to. Why? Because I eat less, and I'm happy eating less. Milwaukee Weight Loss has figured it out. And they have a $200 off with the summer special. Book your free consultation now at MilwaukeeWeightLoss.com. MilwaukeeWeightLoss.com. Results may vary. And I want to emphasize, there's no but. Homer said this, but no, there's no but. There's no, you don't even have to exercise. I was talking to somebody today. They've lost like 40 pounds. And he says, plus, I'm back in the weight room. I'm exercising. I feel better. I said, hey, my Milwaukee Weight Loss, I don't need to do anything. I don't even have to walk. All I have to do is eat less. I'm happy eating less. Their program works. It might be a little different for you, but feel free to call me. I'm the only one promoting Milwaukee Weight Loss who gives you my cell number, 1-414-308-4785. If you have any questions about Milwaukee Weight Loss, there are very few times when Brian Bulaga shakes his head. He's shaking his head right now. He's going, Homer, what is wrong with you? We'll get his follow-up next. Make sure to subscribe on YouTube. Whenever or wherever you're listening, just know we're live on YouTube as well. You can watch the show, see what's happening in the studio, comment along with us, and learn if the dome is open or closed. Just search ESPN Milwaukee on YouTube and subscribe today. For the dome open or closed, you need to be watching at 5:02 to see the official announcement. Then the rest of the show, you can pretty much tell based on how I look. That's more than I'm going to tell you. The Brian Bulaga Homer Hour. The Packers have agreed to a 3-year, $57 million contract extension with Brian Bulaga. I thought you said you're never going to play again. Actually, this is with defensive tackle Devontae Wyatt. $20 million signing bonus. As I said, everything to me is the signing bonus, guaranteed money relative to tell you how long they're really counting on him. He has a year left in his contract. I guess this would tell me that they're going to definitely have him for a year or two after. And his health is very important because He's very good. Well, I will defer to you, actually, on his skills as a player.
Yeah, no, he's very good. And I think this is a good deal, especially if his health does stay good, right? He stays healthy and he's able to play majority of the season, right? And not miss significant periods of time like he has the last few years, because I think he's a very good interior player. And if he does stay healthy, this is another deal that looks really good. It looks really good. I don't know. Like, I'm not into where it ranks among defensive tackles or shades or three techs. Like, I'm not really into that. But I guarantee you it's not very high, if I had to take a guess. So if he performs at a really high level at this salary point, it's going to look like a great deal.
Yes, and you're taking a little bit of a gamble.
Yep.
But I think you gamble on what you think is good.
Yes, 100%. 100%.
So, yes, 10 games last year. And it reinforces what I believe, that this is this season, there are just some things, and they think they're getting better, and the following season is when I think they believe they'll be capable of winning a Super Bowl, even better than this year. But they tell you, is it correct? They tell you how much they like somebody by how much they pay. I'm guessing correct. That's pretty clear to players, right?
Yes. Yes. That is the clearest indicator of how much they like you is how much they pay you.
And how long they want you to be around. I think we'll wait to hear from your Thursday with Jason Woolley. I think he's back this week on Thursday. I should check. In terms of how long they think he'll play. And to me, it means they expect him at least 3 years. So,
yep, that's my guess on it.
And as you asked the most important question, even more important than this, you started the show with asking me what?
Is the Miz on the mound?
Yeah, the Miz is on the mound. And it's impossible to exaggerate how well he's pitching. He's on pace, though he probably won't. I'll be shocked if he goes more than five innings tonight or number of pitches. He hasn't pitched for a while, and the regular season for him is preseason. Be ready to pitch as much as necessary in the postseason. That's just a thought. I don't even know if it's worthy of an opinion, because I haven't checked with anybody. But that's what
pretty
I do.
Thought. Pretty good thought.
Yeah, that's what I do, right?
Yep.
When I'm ready, and any amount of rest is fine, especially when they have a cushion that they have created by overall playing so well. A special analysis show. The five-year recap. Analysis. And it'll go well. And every 15 minutes, I should give an update on Miz. But I don't know if that's going to be done. In general, even with 5 years of analysis, it's in progress, because Brian Bulaga is that good. Next.
Things are definitely backing up along 41 southbound. It's kind of hefty from Good Hope Road, pretty much solidly all the way down past Capitol Drive. On the northbound side, we've got delays from Mayfair Road up to Capitol. On southbound 43, a little heavy from Good Hope to Bender, and then from Keith down to